Republican Representative Kevin Corlew wants your Missouri driver's license to keep working, to get you on a plane or on a military base.
We need to fix our real ID situation. And this impacts a wide swath of Missourians, and we need to take care of it.
That's just one of the bills he sponsored in a busy week in Jefferson City. From KCUR 89.3, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll talk with Kevin Corlew in just a moment, but first here's some of what other folks in Jeff City have been talking about in this very full week. Starting with one of the biggest issues this session, right to work is one step closer to reality in Missouri. If you're in a union, you probably think it's bad news because your fellow workers won't be required to join or pay dues, but the Republican sponsor of the bill in the Senate, Dan Brown, he doesn't think so.
Right to work does not do away with unions at all. And a lot of right-to-work states, Kansas and Oklahoma being examples, have actually got more union members now than they did before right-to-work.
That audio is from MissouriNet. In any case, the Senate passed it 21-12. The House passed its own version this week, too, and final passage might come in the next few days. Lots of other high-profile bills moving forward this week as well, including one carried by our guest today, Kevin Corlew, that would save you from a major pain in the neck at the airport. Real ID would allow Missourians to keep using their driver's license at security checkpoints. That's why 45 other states have passed it, presumably. If it doesn't pass, you better keep your passport or military ID handy. Without them, you won't be flying anywhere. That inconvenience, though, isn't enough to change the mind of Kevin's fellow Republican representative, Bill Kidd of Independence.
That's the problem, is I worry about Fourth Amendment rights. I worry about all sorts of things concerning national ID. Who's going to say I'm going to take my national ID and go into Illinois, or I'm going to have a national ID to go to Oklahoma?
Well, a Senate committee wasn't too worried about it. They've sent the Senate version on for floor debate next week. And another week, another State of the Something speech. This time the judiciary, according to Supreme Court Chief Justice Patricia Breckenridge.
Missouri has a judicial system of which we can be proud. We constantly strive to better serve our citizens. And as we look to the future, I have no doubt we will continue to do so.
That language, a pretty far cry from what Governor Eric Greitens said about Missouri in his State of the State address. He talked about nasty lawyers and murky lawsuits and a judicial hellhole. But the Chief Justice seemed to urge caution about bills that would make big changes to the state's judicial system, limiting civil judgments, and maybe even the proposal to limit the kinds of testimony that expert witnesses can give. Another bill sponsored by our guest today, Kevin Corlew. Kevin, welcome to Statehouse Blend.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here again. I always enjoy your show, and it's great to be a guest on it.
Great to have you back, and glad you could enjoy our trademark donuts as well.
They're very wonderful and a good snack to have.
Sadly, though, our other guest is joining us by phone, and so does not have access to the donuts. That's Jason Hancock, who covers the State House for the Kansas City Star. Jason, welcome to you nonetheless.
I appreciate it, and donuts in spirit, I suppose.
Yes, by all means, partake of whatever donuts you have there in solidarity. Kevin, is it just me, or have you had a pretty busy week in Jefferson City?
It's been a busy week, Brian. It's been a busy couple weeks to the start of the legislature. We've gotten through a number of bills that are moving through committee, and that's where I've been busy with some of the bills that I'm carrying this year in terms of Real ID, an expert witness bill, a student journalist bill, some other things that I'm happy to talk about.
Well, we will definitely talk about them, but I want to talk first about one that you are most certainly not carrying, which is right to work. Seems headed for passage, coming to you in the House maybe as early as this coming week. You've opposed this bill all along. In fact, that was sort of a costly decision on a certain level. A few Republicans who did oppose it last session got primary challenges. Some of them lost, funded by Joplin businessman David Humphreys. Of course, Humphreys was also a big supporter of Governor Greitens. Have you had any lasting sort of ramifications for your opposition to right to work?
Well, I did have a primary election this year and had a tough general as well because I'm in a district that is a swing district. But it's a district that's more concerned about the issues that are important to them rather than whether you're a Republican or Democrat. And that's why I ultimately voted against right to work. But in the long run, the voters voted me back. And I feel that my decision was justified and proven by the vote that was gone, that went in my favor in November.
You haven't changed your mind about right to work?
No, I have not.
Jason Hancock is with us from the Star. Jason, what's on your mind this afternoon?
Well, I think when we're talking about right to work, it's fascinating, this idea that's taken decades of effort by Republican lawmakers to get across the finish line. We're barely in the first month of the session, and there's a chance they could get it done before we hit the February. You know, they have a hearing posted up for the right to work bill, the Senate's right to work bill, in the House on Monday. They could conceivably pass it, send it to the House floor, which could pass it on Tuesday and send it to the governor. Presumably, I guess he could sign it on Wednesday if he wanted to. So things are moving at breakneck speed this session, and I think a lot of that is there's just all this pent-up legislative agenda that's been thwarted for the last 8 years by Democratic Governor Jay Nixon, and now that he's out of the way and there's a Republican in the governor's mansion, you're seeing a lot of stuff move really quickly. Right to work, other labor bills, some of the tort reform bills that Representative Corlew talked about, everything just seems to be speeding through the process, and what's normally a pretty quiet first couple weeks has been anything but for those of us who've been lucky enough to be there.
Yeah, is that your sense of this as well, Kevin Corlew, that this is an unusually speedy and busy opening of a session?
Well, it is speedy, but you do have to realize that many of these bills are bills that, as Jason mentioned, have worked their way through the legislature in years past. So we've had debates on them. We've worked through issues. These are the bills that you're seeing go through are bills that have passed the General Assembly in the past but have just been vetoed by the governor. So this is kind of an extension of that. They are moving quickly, but I would say that they're not moving hastily. They have been considered and debated.
Before we get away from right to work, Kevin Corlew, I mean, this, as you said, this is a big issue. Those of you who oppose it, which is almost the entire Democratic caucus and then a few Republicans, is this the end of the conversation about right to work? Once this decision is made, are you eager to just move on and get on to other things, or do you plan to continue to pursue this? Are there steps that you can take to ameliorate what you see as any damage that might be done by this bill?
Well, on the particular issue of the right to work, I think once it's passed, that we need to move on to other things. But at the same time, we also need to be cognizant that we have good working conditions here in the state for our workers, that we're seeing good wages, and that has been the concern that's been expressed to me in terms of right to work, is that there's a feeling that in right to work states the wages overall are lower, workplace safety is lower. So we have to be then cognizant of that to make sure that doesn't happen, and try to look for ways that we can help the situation. There are issues in this particular bill that I'm concerned about in terms of opening up our businesses to unnecessary lawsuits and criminal implications and charges. So those are the kind of things that when it's implemented, we need to watch and be careful. And if there are remedies that need to be made, we need to address those.
You mentioned lawsuits. Let's move on to talk about some of the issues that affect the judicial system and the courts. You are very involved with a couple of those conversations. One that has received a lot of attention from the governor's State of the State address and other places is tort reform. Another is a bill that talks about expert witness testimony, and you're the sponsor of that bill.
Yes.
Let's start there. And for those who don't really understand the technicalities of this issue, give us the simple version. Give us the fifth grade version of this expert witness testimony bill. What are you trying to do?
Well, in court, when you're in particularly a complex case, a case that demands scientific evidence, and it's evidence that just isn't common knowledge to the average lay juror or lay person, then you rely upon experts to come in and testify about the science and the procedures, and then to give an opinion in the case. And there is a standard that has been used in the federal courts, including the federal courts here in Missouri, as well as two-thirds of the states, that sets a standard to say that that first of all, the person testifying really is an expert in terms of their knowledge, experience, education, training, or skill, and that two, the things that they're talking about, the opinion that they're bringing is based upon good scientific methods and procedures and sufficient facts and data. So it's just a means whereby that those experts that come and testify in court really are experts and are bringing forth good science.
So it would be up to a judge to rule that the expert meets those qualifications and that the things they're saying are rooted in that.
That's right. It's called a gatekeeping responsibility, and the case, the standard itself came from a line of Supreme Court cases, starting with a case called Daubert v. Merrill Dow, and so that's where it is called the Daubert standard. But the judge, in the first instance, takes a look at what the expert is going to testify about, and makes a determination that those things are met, the sufficient facts and data, and good procedures and methods. The judge does not make a determination whether he or she likes the opinion or whether that opinion, what the opinion is about. Rather, it's how they got to their opinion. So you can have competing scientific theories that both go to the jury, and then the jury can decide.
Jason Hancock, the Trial Lawyers Association opposes this, obviously, this has been around for a while in Missouri. This law has not been around in Missouri for a while. What's the argument against it?
Well, a lot of these so-called tort reform bills, whether it be the expert witnesses, tinkering with consumer protections, or changing the standard for bringing discrimination lawsuits, all these things are sort of falling under the changes to our legal system. But the trial attorneys and what a lot of, advocates for the plaintiffs in general would say is that these laws are trying to tip the scales too far towards whether it be the business community or away from who would bring these lawsuits, the victims of these lawsuits, that by passing all of this, you're going to tip the balance too far in the other direction. It's going to be impossible for people to be made whole again, whether it be somebody who was ripped off by a car lot or somebody who was discriminated against by their employer. Mm-hmm. The other side of that, obviously, the business community would say that the scale has been tipped in the other direction for a long time. They're just trying to even things out. So you're right that these are things that we've been debating for a number of years now. Not to keep belaboring the point, but a lot of this stuff has been stopped because there's been a Democrat in the governor's office.
Well,
and it doesn't look like there's much standing in its way this year.
Yeah, I guess it can't be lost on you, Kevin Corlew, that some of the very unions that you have stood with in opposing right to work are opposed to this legislation for fear, perhaps, that it would limit workers' abilities, say, to sue their employers or things like that.
Well, and the unions, by and large, have not been real involved in this issue. There was one union that testified against it. But in regards to what Jason talked about, and also what you're saying, is we do have to be careful that the scales of justice are balanced. And there's a reason why Lady Justice or the goddess Themis is shown with a blindfold. And that's because it should not make a difference whether you're rich or poor, young or old, black or white, when you come into court. And right now, there's a feeling in various surveys, particularly among the business community, as Jason mentioned, that our courts right now are tipped against our businesses, our small businesses, are people who are trying to do commerce here in the state, to the tune of being ranked in the bottom 10 of court systems for business interests, to be named on what you mentioned, the judicial hellhole list. So my idea and my job as a policymaker is not to tip the scales the other way. In other words, I don't think we need to jump to number one on those surveys, or I don't think we need, I wouldn't want to be in a state where we're the worst for plaintiffs either. But we do need to be fair to all litigants that come into court.
And did you hear Chief Justice Breckinridge's State of the Judiciary address as urging legislators to be cautious in adopting these bills, or do you not think that's what she was saying? Because she was sort of circumspect in her language.
She was, and she gave some very good points about our court system and the very good areas that our court system is serving the people of Missouri. But there are always areas of improvement, and I think it's natural for judges to try to really protect their arena. That's the system that we have, the three branches of government, and it works when all three branches really try to stand up for themselves and through through that, you have more of a balanced system. So I do think, though, that it is in the legislature's purview to look at things in our court system and to make sure that the law is being is fair and is being applied fairly, and to make changes where we can. It is the legislature's job to make law. It's the judicial branch's job to interpret the law.
Jason Hancock, what else is on your mind as we talk with Representative Kevin Corlew?
Well, I don't think we could let this whole thing go by without delving into the details of Real ID, obviously, especially since we're all going to be turned away at the airport, apparently, in January, unless the Missouri legislature does something. I was taken this week by the opposition from some members of the Republican Party in the House. There's obviously with some in the Senate, but it wasn't as vocal. And it doesn't seem to be as vociferous or outspoken as it was in the House committee. I'd be curious to know if Representative Corlew is confident that he can get that bill moving, because obviously there's a lot of people with privacy concerns that are not so inclined to turn over their documents and have them scanned and stored by the state. I know his bill has creates that bifurcated method where you can opt in or opt out, but it doesn't seem to be winning a lot of accolades from some segments of his own party.
I appreciate that question, Jason, and we need to fix our Real ID situation. In 2005, the Congress implemented the Real ID Act to enhance security in terms of state identifications, and through the procedures and mechanisms that a state identification is issued by. In 2009, our state legislature put in a law that said we would not comply. So, and as of last year in 2016, it has affected Missourians when they try to go on military bases. They have to have additional identification besides their Missouri license. In our hearing this week, we heard from family members who had been turned away at military bases or military institutions. We heard from truck drivers who are having a hard time delivering goods onto the bases. We heard from our airport facilities that are concerned what might happen next year. We heard from travel agencies and people that travel for business. So this impacts a wide swath of Missourians, and we need to take care of it. I recognize that there are some concerns in privacy and also just a pushback on the federal government. And we're trying to address those. In particular, the legislation that I have in the House, and also that Senator Silvey and others have in the Senate, is have an option for citizens that they can choose to have the Real ID compliant license, or they can choose not to and have the regular Missouri license that we have now.
Back to Jason's question, I mean, what do you think are the chances of your fellow Republicans moving this forward?
I think we will get this done. I'm confident that we will. I knew all along that we were going to have the debate, and we should. We should have good, healthy, robust debates in the House of Representatives, and they're going to be along those two issues. I think that we can answer and address those concerns, I believe that we have a majority of our party that have heard from their citizens, just like I have over and over, that are asking us, why aren't you getting this fixed? And I think at the end of the day, we'll come together along with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. We'll have a bipartisan effort and be able to pass this and do something good for our citizens, a very practical step that makes a difference for them.
All right. Well, we'll see how that all works out. Let's keep on moving to another big issue involving transportation, but a little more terrestrial transportation, and that's the bill that sets statewide standards for Uber and Lyft, so-called
transportation network companies,
TNCs. Where'd you come down on this?
Well, I supported that bill this year. As you may recall, that I opposed that bill last year,
along with most Kansas City area representatives.
Right. There were some concerns that we had in place. Now, Kansas City was one of the first movers on this issue several years ago in having Uber come into our city and provide that service. But Kansas City also made sure that they had some regulations in place so that our people were safe, and that in mainly. And so the issues that we requested were implemented into this bill this time. The city of Kansas City is able to do audits at least twice a year of the transportation network companies, the rideshare companies, to be able to make sure that they are complying with the regulations that are in place.
Jason, as you have covered this story for the Star, I guess I want to ask you something. It feels to me like, I mean, obviously, lobbyists and companies that have an interest in matters before the General Assembly are not exactly shy often about, you know, working for their interests in Jeff City. And mostly I'm observing this from afar here in Kansas City, but it sure has felt like a full court press from Uber on this, right down to sponsoring free rides around the Capitol on Inauguration Day. Am I wrong to see that?
No, Uber has been very active in Jefferson City, to say the least. I mean, that was one of the things that turned off a lot of Kansas City leaders last session was, you know, they Kansas City Council and city government negotiated with Uber. They came to an agreement, and they had a big, you know, party and shook hands and got their pictures taken together, and everyone was very happy. And then a few months later, they were back in Jefferson City asking for a statewide bill that would have gutted those regulations. And so that sort of poisoned the well right from the beginning. But I think Uber just thinks they can get a better deal for them in Jeff City as opposed to negotiating with city councils all over the state. I mean, the bill that's coming out of the House, it does have that piece in it just for Kansas City that just lets the city audit the TNCs twice a year, and they would cover the cost of the audit, meaning like Uber or Lyft, and they could get fined if they are found to be in violation. I'm wondering when it gets to the Senate, though, if our friends over on the other side of the state in St. Louis will have anything to say about this. They have a taxicab commission that's got a pretty firm grip on the market, and there's been litigation and lots of turmoil on that side of the state involving Uber and the local government there. I don't know if this thing is completely sewed up just yet, but you do seem to have the legislative leaders making this. I mean, the Speaker of the House mentioned it in his opening day address. It's been on the top of the agenda since we got back this year. So it's definitely moving, and it definitely seems like it's on its way to the governor, but anything can happen in the Missouri Senate.
So for all the things that did happen this week in Jefferson City, one thing that did not happen and has not yet happened is the governor presenting his budget proposal for this session. Often in the past, that has come as part of the State of the State address, but this year, it hasn't. And Representative Gail McCann-Beatty, who's the House Minority Leader and a representative from the Kansas City area, or actually from Kansas City, had this to say when she spoke to press at the end of this legislative week.
Also, with week four, we have yet to see anything on the budget. What we did hear from the governor was a task force on tax credits, which I think we need a task force both on tax credits as well as tax cuts. We heard on the floor just this week that 2 years ago we passed a tax cut that we were expecting a $17 million reduction in revenue that actually turned out to be a $200 million cut in our revenue.
It was Gail McCann-Beatty speaking with press yesterday, Thursday, at the end of a long week in Jefferson City. Representative Kevin Corlew, would you have expected to see a budget by now?
Well, normally we would, but I also understand that this is a transition year, and I we are going to get the work done. We're going to be able to get the budget done within session as we have to. But you know, it's also important to remember that the appropriations committees are already doing their work, and those are specific subject matter areas, whether it be education or public safety, corrections, things like that. And they're already having their committee meetings with the appropriate agencies, hearing from the agencies on what they need in their budget and what they're requesting for. And those are hearings that take place every year regardless. So I wouldn't say that we're slowed down too much by getting the overall budget from the governor, because there are steps that would be taken now anyways that are being taken.
You know, I'm curious. Obviously, the governor's proposal of a budget is an important moment during a legislative session. But in past years, when that governor was a Democrat presenting it to overwhelmingly Republican legislature, it It was a point of interest. It was a point of note. It did not necessarily look a lot like the budget that was eventually approved by the General Assembly. How will that be different?
Right. And that's the balance of powers that I talked about earlier too. That the governor will bring a budget, but it's ultimately the legislature's duty to pass that out. I think, and where you saw disagreements a lot of times in the biggest scope was just on the percentage that was expected that the revenue would grow. Usually the governor came in high because he wanted to make sure that he was seen as funding his priorities. The legislature would come down with a lower expected revenue increase, and they'd meet somewhere in the middle. I'm hopeful that this year that both sides will realize what that ends up doing when we don't hit that right, especially if we overshoot, thinking that more revenue is going to come in than it does, is that we have these withholds. And that's the toughest part on our institutions, our schools, is when they're expecting money and then it gets withheld. We need to do a better job of making the budget at the front end, and even if it means making the tough decisions and making sure that then those agencies, schools, administrations can be able to set their budget properly.
Well, and isn't it true that if you're making those decisions on the front end as the General Assembly, you're deciding, frankly, who's not getting the money, whereas if it comes down to the withholds that have to be decided by the governor, you're essentially handing all of that power, when it is power, about cutting hundreds of millions of dollars from the budget,
right?
You're handing it all over to the governor's office.
That's right. That's right. And so it's important for us to do our best at the front end to put a budget that we think we can live with throughout the year so that those priorities will be met.
What'd you think of the first round of withholds that Governor Greitens brought out last week, including a pretty severe hit to higher education and then some millions from other areas too?
Well, I was disappointed for those that were cut. And it wasn't, it's not a disappointment with the governor because it's something that he has to do. It's part of his constitutional responsibility and somebody has to make those cuts. And as you've heard before, is that because a lot of the federal dollars, they are tied to certain things that can't be cut, a lot of times what takes the hit are some of more of those discretional spending. So somebody was going to take the hit, and it's no matter what decisions were made, there's going to be pushback. One of the areas where I hope or where I saw and was more disappointed with was it seemed like some of the Kansas City institutions, UMKC in particular, took quite large sums of cuts. And I would have liked to have seen that more spread out throughout the state so that our local institutions and the things that we have here in Kansas City would not be hurt.
Jason Hancock, as you think about that budget situation, what are your observations? You've been covering the State House a long time. You've seen a lot of governors' initial budget proposals.
Yeah, it gets rough when the revenues aren't coming in and you have to start making decisions. There's really only three pots of money that you can take huge amounts out of. You know, the budget is really eaten up by K-12 public education, higher education, and Medicaid. And with Medicaid, if you cut a dollar, you could lose a couple bucks in federal money. So you can't really do a whole lot with Medicaid. It's an entitlement anyway, or at least we'll see what the federal government does with that. But as it stands right now, you can't do a whole lot with Medicaid. And it's pretty politically poisonous to start cutting K-12 education. You know, you'll see people withhold money from transportation or, you know, teacher training, but you won't see a whole lot of cuts to the basic formula. So under Nixon, before him, and now under Greitens, it seems like higher ed's going to be the even though their appropriation has gone up every year since I've been here, when it comes time to withhold, that's a lot of the money ends up coming out of higher ed. And I think the biggest reason is that they can find the money somewhere else, and all those wonderful students out there paying tuition maybe will be taking the hit on this particular withhold, as they're already talking about trying to figure out ways to lift caps on tuition increases. You know, that's just unfortunately the reality. A lot of this is there's just not a whole lot of big pools of money that you can start to draw from when you have to withhold money when revenues come in short. And I mean, none of these are popular places to start cutting. You know, we just kind of hope that revenue improves. It doesn't look like it's going to be the case this year. It looks like it's going to be pretty tough. budget year. I'll be curious to see what the governor proposes, because there's not going to be a lot of room for big, splashy new programs. We'll see how frugal things get on some of the priorities that have been laid out over the years.
Yeah, just a few minutes left here, and I want to touch base about a big issue out of the campaign, which was ethics and ethics reform. And a lot of energy this month has gone into one ethics reform bill in particular, a ban on lobbyist gifts. Mm-hmm. Other proposals that Governor Greitens came out with, the ban on the revolving door, so-called, for lobbyists, does not appear to have as much traction in the General Assembly. But then there have been these other issues, the appointment of David Minnick to head the Securities Division in the Secretary of State's office has been a controversial appointment because his own firm has sometimes been the target of investigations by that division. Attorney General Josh Hawley this week has had to deal with questions about where he is living and his argument that living on the outskirts of Columbia is close enough to meet the constitutional requirement that that elected officials live in Jefferson City. All that to say, there's sort of this constellation of issues that may be taking a bit of the shine off of the drain the swamp. We're going to usher in a new era of strict adherence to good ethics and integrity in Jeff City. Is that how you feel about it?
Well, I think that it was a priority going in. It was a priority from the campaign, as you mentioned, to deal with some of these ethical issues. And we did that in terms of at least one component of that lobbyist gift bans, a good solid bill that limits the ability of lobbyist influence and increases the influence of citizens. But I think it's incumbent upon all of us and all reaches of government to make sure that within our sphere is that we are being ethical. I mean, the ethics laws only go so far as the person himself or herself is ethical. So we always need to be cognizant of that. Some of these issues, I think, aren't become bigger deals than they really are. And I don't know the ins and outs and all the details of the situations that you mentioned, but the attention paid to them shows that there's an increased awareness right now, as there should be, on ethical government.
Do you think Josh Hawley should live in Jefferson City?
You know, and I haven't looked at all the research and looked at the case law, but I did read his explanation, and it seemed reasonable. It was that his explanation was that when the law was drafted to reside in office in Jefferson City, that the purpose of that was to make sure that the office holder is close by and can answer when called upon, and that means at the time that was written, you could maybe live at the outskirts of Jefferson City, but couldn't get there to the Capitol as soon as you could now with transportation and driving the way it is, and him living apparently in the outskirts of Columbia and in the country within a 20-minute drive. So I think he gave a reasonable explanation.
Well, all that to say, this all amounts to a pretty interesting first month of a new legislative session, and as it continues, we'll keep talking about it. Jason Hancock covers the State House for the Kansas City Star. Jason, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Representative Kevin Corlew, Republican from Kansas City's Northland, thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it, Brian. Thank you for the opportunity.
As you know, since this is your second time with us, we ask our legislator guests to capture the moment by choosing our closing music. What do you suggest today?
Well, I'm a big fan of the band Switchfoot, and there's a song that over the past few years that I've really enjoyed. It's called Dark Horses. I don't know if you have that available, but that would be one that I would like. It's kind of summed up. I've been through some rough campaigns but come out victorious, and that's been a song that's kind of been a mantra. No matter how far we're down, that we're going to keep pushing ahead, and we will succeed.
Outstanding. Kevin Corlew, thanks again.
Thank you.
Statehouse Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. If you've already done that and you like what you hear, please post a review. We're also always available at kcur.org/statehouseblend. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. You can keep up on the show and the news from Jefferson City and Topeka, too. I'm at PTS Brian, and you can follow the host of Statehouse Blend Kansas, my good friend Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. We try to use the hashtag State House Blend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR 89.3. If you have any other thoughts on the program, shoot me an email, brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you on the radio.
Mistake.